Chapter 43, verse 1. But the famine in the land was severe. Verse 2. And when they had eaten up the rations which they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, Go again and procure some food for us. Verse 3. But Judah said to him, Judah was apparently now the brother's spokesman. Reuben, the oldest, chose to remain silent. He might have lost credibility with his over-the-top offer of his son's lives as a guarantee he would bring Benjamin back safely. Genesis chapter 42, verse 37. In addition, Reuben had long before angered his father by sleeping with Bilhah, Jacob's concubine. Genesis chapter 35, verse 22. As regards brothers 2 and 3, Simeon and Levi, Simeon was being held hostage in Egypt, and both had likely been discredited after they slaughtered the male inhabitants of Shechem, actions which infuriated Jacob. See Genesis chapter 34, verse 30, and Genesis chapter 49, verses 5 through 7. Judah, brother number 4, stepped forward and assumed leadership. Verse 3 continued. The man warned us, Do not let me see your faces unless your brother is with you. Verse 4. If you will let our brother go with us, we will go down and procure food for you. Verse 5. But if you will not let him go, we will not go down. For the man said to us, Do not let me see your faces unless your brother is with you. Verse 6. And Israel said, Why did you serve me so ill as to tell the man that you had another brother? Verse 7, they replied, But the man kept asking about us and our family, saying, Is your father still living? Have you another brother? In truth, Joseph never asked this. The brothers volunteered the information about their younger brother. Genesis chapter 42, verse 13. But now, in self-defense against their father's accusation, the brothers made up this detail. Verse 7 continued, And we answered him accordingly. How were we to know that he would say, Bring your brother here? This is a legitimate argument. Why would it have occurred to the brothers that if they told the Egyptian vizier they had another brother, he would insist they bring him to Egypt? Verse 8, Then Judah said to his father Israel, Send the boy in my care, and let us be on our way, that we may live and not die. Judah echoed Jacob's words when he initially sent the brothers to Egypt to procure rations, that we may live and not die. Genesis chapter 42, verse 2. Using someone's own words against them in an argument is very effective. Verse 8, continued, you and we and our children. Verse 9, I myself will be surety for him. Judah used legal terminology guaranteeing his father that he would bear full responsibility for Benjamin. Verse 9, continued, you may hold me responsible. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, I shall stand guilty before you forever. Judah's presentation was rather more sober and realistic than Reuben's wild offer of his two sons' lives. It is often tempting to speak as Reuben did, to use drama or exaggeration to make a point. It may work the first time, and even on subsequent occasions, but once a person acquires a reputation for exaggeration or melodrama, his credibility is lost. Verse 10. For we could have been there and back twice if we had not dawdled. Judah again echoed Jacob's words when Jacob rebuked the sons for dawdling instead of leaving immediately to procure provisions. Genesis chapter 42, verse 1. Thereby offering a subtle rebuke of Jacob, who was now causing them to dawdle by withholding Benjamin. Verse 11. Then their father Israel said to them, If it must be so, do this. Take some of the choice products of the land in your baggage, and carry them down as a gift for the man, some balm and some honey, gum, ladanum, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Verse 12, and take with you double the money, carrying back with you the money that was replaced in the mouths of your bags. Perhaps it was a mistake. Verse 13, take your brother too. Jacob may simply have been too pained by the separation from Benjamin to mention him by name. Calling him your brother created for Jacob some psychological distance. Or he may have wanted to emphasize to his sons that Benjamin is their brother so that they remember their responsibility for him. Verse 13 continued, and go back at once to the man. Verse 14, and may El Shaddai dispose the man to mercy towards you, that he may release to you your other brother. Jacob's reference to Simeon simply as your other brother demands explanation. According to Nachmanides, Jacob avoided any mention of Simeon by name because he was still angry at Simeon and Levi for their murderous violence in Shechem following the rape of their sister Dinah, chapter 34. Whether or not Nachmanides' theory is correct, the Torah does not record Jacob mentioning Simeon by name during the entire time his son was captive in Egypt. It is even possible that, had it not been for his family's dire need for food, Jacob would have allowed Simeon to languish in captivity. Jacob only asked his sons to return to Egypt when food ran out. In effect, Jacob said, "While you're out picking up food, pick up your brother too." And we know that at the end of his life, Jacob had only harsh words for Simeon and Levi. Genesis chapter 49, verses 5 through 7. Verse 14 continued, as well as Benjamin. As for me, if I am to be bereaved, I shall be bereaved. Jacob's remark expressed total resignation. He was preparing himself for the worst, which may well be the best emotional strategy at such a difficult juncture. Verse 15. So the men took that gift, and they took with them double the money, as well as Benjamin. They made their way down to Egypt, where they presented themselves to Joseph. The brothers appear to have been granted immediate access to the most important man in Egypt aside from Pharaoh. Joseph must have issued instructions that he be informed if this group from Canaan returned. Verse 16. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to his house steward, "Take the men into the house, slaughter and prepare an animal, for the men will dine with me at noon." Joseph instructed his Egyptian steward to prepare food for his Israelite brothers. Since an Egyptian would not have been capable of slaughtering meat in a kosher manner, this verse has troubled those traditional Jewish commentators who believe the Israelites, or at least their leaders, kept the laws of kashrut even before those laws were written. There is no reason to believe such laws were observed centuries before they were given. If anything, inclusion of such details should be welcomed as testimony to the Torah's historical authenticity, since, as I note on a number of occasions, if the Torah had been written much later, it is unlikely stories of the founding Jews failing to observe Jewish ritual laws would have been included. Verse 17, the man did as Joseph said, and he brought the men into Joseph's house. Verse 18, but the men were frightened at being brought into Joseph's house. It must be, they thought, because of the money replaced in our bags the first time that we have been brought inside, as a pretext to attack us and seize us as slaves with our pack animals. This is another rare instance of the Torah relating what someone is thinking. What they thought at first blush makes sense. Why would the most powerful man in Egypt invite them, lowly foreigners in need, into his house? Was it a trap? But Hamilton makes an excellent argument that their fear was unfounded. It never dawns on the brothers that Joseph has enough authority to have them arrested on the spot without having to resort to a dinner invitation. Verse 19. So they went up to Joseph's house steward and spoke to him at the entrance of the house. Verse 20. If you please, my lord, they said, we came down once before to procure food. Verse 21. But when we arrived at the night encampment and opened our bags, there was each one's money in the mouth of his bag, our money in full, so we have brought it back with us. Verse 22. And we have brought down with us other money to procure food. We do not know who put the money in our bags. Verse 23, he replied, all is well with you. Do not be afraid. Your God, the God of your father, must have put treasure in your bags for you. Since an Egyptian would not have said such a thing, let alone invoked the name of God on his own, Joseph undoubtedly told the steward what to say. And what he said must have further added to the brothers' belief that strange things, perhaps divinely ordained, were happening to them. Verse 23 continued, I got your payment, and he brought out Simeon to them. One would think the brothers would have been elated to see their brother healthy and safe, but no reaction by them is recorded. And given that Simeon was undoubtedly treated well and well fed while in Egypt, he may not have been all that elated to see his brothers. Verse 24. Then the man brought the men into Joseph's house. He gave them water to bathe their feet, and he provided feed for their asses. Verse 25. They laid out their gifts to await Joseph's arrival at noon, for they had heard that they were to dine there. Verse 26. When Joseph came home, they presented to him the gifts that they had brought with them into the house, bowing low before him to the ground. On this visit, all 11 brothers bowed down to Joseph, just as predicted in the second of his youthful dreams, Genesis chapter 37, verse 9. Another, perhaps the most explicit indicator of the divine element in the Joseph story. Verse 27. He greeted them, and he said, how is your aged father of whom you spoke? Is he still in good health? Verse 28. They replied, it is well with your servant, our father. He is still in good health. And they bowed and made obeisance. Though the translation does not note this, the word shalom, peace, appears three times in these two verses. Whereas once the brothers could not speak a word of shalom to Joseph, Genesis chapter 37, verse 4, now, as one commentator put it, there is a veritable burst of shaloms. Verse 29. Looking about, he saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and asked, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? And he went on, may God be gracious to you, my boy. The Hebrew words are my son, not my boy. Why would Joseph refer to Benjamin, who after all is not all that much younger than he, as my son? It was probably to keep up the act of the Egyptian superior, who had no idea who these Hebrews were. Verse 30. With that, Joseph hurried out, for he was overcome with feeling toward his brother and was on the verge of tears. He went into a room and wept there. Verse 31. Then he washed his face, reappeared, and now in control of himself gave the order, serve the meal. Essay. Does chosen mean superior? Verse 32. They served him by himself and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves. For the Egyptians could not dine with the Hebrews, since that would be abhorrent to the Egyptians. The Egyptians regarded themselves as a superior race. Foreigners were viewed as unclean, and therefore Egyptians ate only with fellow Egyptians. This Egyptian particularism probably asserted itself even more strongly in this situation because the Hebrews were shepherds, an occupation viewed by the Egyptians as abhorrent. Genesis chapter 46, verse 34. Had the Egyptians lived and dined alongside the Hebrews, they might have seen these foreigners as equal human beings and might not have later enslaved them. Arguably, the most unique commandment in the Torah is to love the stranger, for example, Leviticus chapter 19, verse 34, which involves learning to see ourselves in people who are different. Perceiving others as real people, as real as we are, makes it very difficult to mistreat them. The Egyptians' belief in their racial and religious superiority was not unique. Almost every people in history, including the Jews, has considered itself in some way exalted. However, there are at least four significant differences between the Jews' belief in their chosenness and other nations' beliefs in their superiority. First, the Jewish notion of chosenness never meant Jews were inherently superior to any other people. The Hebrew Bible goes out of its way to make that clear. As the prophet Amos said, "For me, O Israelites, you are just like the Ethiopians, declares the Lord." Amos chapter 9, verse 7. Second, no central text of any group, or Bible of any religion, depicts its own group as negatively as the Jewish Bible often depicts Jews. The Torah, to cite but one of many examples, repeatedly depicts the newly freed Israelite slaves as ingrates and malcontents. Exodus chapter 16, verses 2 through 3, Numbers chapter 11, verses 4 through 6, among other places. In addition, aside from the right to the Holy Land, which itself was permitted only once the Canaanites had sunk to a particularly low moral and ethical level, the Bible makes clear that chosenness confers no special rights, only increased obligations, on Jews. "You alone have I singled out of all the families of the earth. That is why I will call you to account for all your iniquities." Amos chapter 3, verse 2. Third, one could not convert to a group that was race or ethnicity-based. A non-Egyptian could not convert to becoming an Egyptian. There was a racial element to the Egyptians and all other groups' exalted status. In contrast, Jews have always accepted members of other nations and races. Therefore, Jewish chosenness could not possibly have a racial element. Anyone who joins the Jewish people becomes chosen. Fourth, whereas the claimed superiority of any ethnic or national group was never believed by any other ethnic or national group, vast numbers of non-Jews have believed, or at the very least suspected, Jewish chosenness may well be true. Verse 33. As they were seated by his direction, from the oldest in the order of his seniority to the youngest in the order of his youth, the men looked at one another in astonishment. Things kept getting stranger. First, their money mysteriously reappeared in their bags. Then the vizier's steward told them their god must have put it there. Then they were invited to a meal in the home of Egypt's most powerful official. Why would he take any interest in them? Now the vizier seated them according to their birth order. That could not have been an accident. How could he have known? They had to have begun to suspect the steward was right. God was playing a role in their lives. Verse 34. Portions were served them from his table, but Benjamin's portion was several times that of anyone else. It seems Joseph was continuing the unfortunate family tradition of displaying favoritism, here fed by the fact that Benjamin was his only full, as opposed to half-brother, and was also the only brother not present while the terrible crime was committed against him. The Hebrew word translated here as several is actually the Hebrew word five. Verse 34 continued, "And they drank their fill with him." The Hebrew states that they drank and became drunk with him. Another riddle for the brothers. Why would the second most powerful man, in the most powerful country in the world as they knew it, have a private meal and even get drunk with them?